Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I am Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Instagram, Kick. Maybe you're listening later wherever you get your podcasts. And if so, you can get ad-free versions of this podcast or the rest of the podcasts we do at patreon.com/comicbookclub.
And if you want all ad versions, I'm working on some stuff where I just edit in like fun commercials from the 80s and 90s. So if you want to know what time we're having Stove Top, it's 6 and 8 if you tune into the all ad version of Comic Book Club.
Wow.
That actually sounds pretty good.
Are you talking about hits from 80s, 90s, and today, or just 80s and 90s?
That's what I'm talking about. What do you think
threshold is? And I'm legitimately asking this question. What do you think the threshold is for nostalgia for ads? Like, because obviously we're not going to be nostalgic for ads that are on this year, but
I think it's mm-hmm. the weirder ones. I think it's strong. You're talking Micro Machines guy, you're talking Sunny D, you're talking all the hits.
Time to make the donuts.
Oh yeah, all the celebrities.
Where's the beep
stuff. Yeah, sure. We're not like dying for the H&R Block commercial from 1997, but
I mean the Bud Light
quality wasn't there.
What's up? I mean, that's still, you know.
Well, they literally replay that. Yeah.
What's up?
The that one was, where they say, what is up? They say, what is up?
What is the up?
What is the look up, my friends?
Well, anyway, check out Justin's podcast. What did you say?
All ad. Yeah, it's all ad. I take our podcast and I add more ads. All right. Ads.
Yeah, it's right. All ads. No ads.
All ads.
Smart. That's double. You can check that out at patreon.com/comicbookclub/allads, of course.
All ads.
But we have two great guests for you this evening, so why don't we bring in the first one? He is one of the co-creators behind the new DC Superman, the official cookbook, which lets you finally cook the Man of Steel. Ladies and gentlemen, Jermaine McLaughlin. Jermaine,
hey,
welcome.
Hey, welcome. Good to have
Hello.
You.
Hello.
Pleasure to meet you, gents. I can tell this is going to be a wild ride.
Oh, I don't know.
Just a regular ride. Yeah, fun summer ride.
But excited to have you here. This is your book's birthday. Your book is out in stores today, which is awesome. People can check it out from Inside Editions. But this is not your first cookbook, right? Like, you also worked on a Spider-Man one. So just broad question, because, like, I don't know, Spider-Man, you know, he eats a lot of wheat cakes. Superman.
Right.
So like how do you start to approach something like this? Is it combing through the comics and figuring out, okay, here's some recipes I can pull out, or what's the first step when you're embracing something like this?
The first steps. So I will say right off the jump, this is a collaborative process. So it is my esteemed editor Lex Sattler getting me on a Zoom call with a pair of chefs on the Spider-Man cookbook and one solo chef, Elena P. Craig, on this one. And we just brainstorm. Truth be told, on the Spider-Man one, it was a little easier because I was the guy. I was just, we were using the five boroughs. So
nice.
We had a easier roadmap in terms of like, what we wanted, and it then it just became a question of what burrow do we put it in, and can I come up with enough crazy Peter / Miles anecdotes to get us through an entire book? And somehow we made that one work. This one was this one was a little different in that I had to give my editor and Elena a wee bit of a crash course. So essentially, we got together. I said, all right, get yourself a subscription to DC Infinite app. You're going to watch Superman and Lois. You're going to watch Superman. You're going to watch the Bruce Timm Superman cartoon. You're going to watch Justice League. So I just immersed them. You're going to go Little Silver Age, little post-crisis, little rebirth, et cetera, et cetera. So I just got a jam going and made them read / watch all of that. They came back to me with like more recipes than I ever could have expected. And we just ran with it from there. Once they had an idea what the recipes were, because a lot of this Elena dreamed up completely off the top of her head. As in, once she got going, it was like, what? You might want to calm down.
Are you talking about the Phantom Zone cookies?
The Phantom Zone cookies.
Yeah, because that seemed a little fucked up. You know what I mean? You're like celebrating somebody who's trapped, and you're like, I'm going to eat you. I mean, that's kind of hard.
Your stomach is kind of like a Phantom Zone for food. So,
I put that food in jail is what I'm thinking.
Oh, man.
It is
my
escapes.
Body.
It is
my
escapes.
Body prison. Yeah, it always finds its way out.
She got the aesthetics of the projector, Zone, but definitely not the intent. So, But once she went to town, it was just a matter of me crafting the stories around it. And I think somehow we made it work.
Yeah, I mean, it's delicious. It looks amazing. And also a lot of great reads in there. So congratulations.
Thank you. It was and I may step on an upcoming question you have, but yeah, it was a wee bit of tough going because Lex, my editor, was dead set on this being told through in the voice of Martha Kent, which in hindsight I understand, but in practice, me and Martha, we have so much in common, you know.
Nice.
So then the idea was this is all stuff that could be potentially made by Martha Kent on the Kent's farm, or
is more of it's a love letter to her son and her grandson and all of his friends and in Metropolis, all of his friends in the Justice League. It's just a nice little it's the gift for the man, for the Superman who has everything, you know. You can make anything you want. You can travel to any part of the world or the universe to grab anything you want, but a mother's love and the recipe she bestows upon you, you can't find that anywhere else. So just getting that to once I got that mindset behind me and then was able to get Keelix involved in a couple of the recipes for a nice little back and forth, started to coalesce and come together.
I would say so.
Yeah,
I just wanted to bring up a question here from the comments that I do think is pretty pressing. You wrote a Superman cookbook and your boss's name was Lex?
Yes.
Suspect.
The irony of that is not lost on either of us.
All right, fair enough.
Is your boss evil? Is there evil?
Yeah, is there an evilness?
She was definitely not evil. She was
Does she wear purple suits a lot?
Did have red hair.
Ooh, nice. Right.
Could be more Alina, perhaps.
And all of the research that you've done, I feel like I'm trying to think of what we know about Kryptonian food. Did you encounter much about that in the comics? Because I feel like that's something that isn't touched on, really.
That's when I told you Elena went to town, bring stuff like that up. But no, because I had the privilege of working at DC for 16 years. I've read comics since I was a kid, and there was at no time did the culinary experience that is Kryptonian eating ever like ring in my head to where I could, oh yeah, I can go back to that issue and or this issue right here. So we pulled a lot of that stuff straight out of our posteriors on that one. So,
well, then, I mean, not to use a dumb pun, but like, given there aren't a lot of those recipes to pull on, what makes something a correct recipe for a Superbad cookbook? Is it like, this is the dumb pun, is it a gut check? Is that basically like just you having this knowledge, knowing the world of Superbad and being like, that doesn't quite fit, or this does quite fit? Or are there other things that you're looking for there?
Little from column A, little from column B, because there are some staples in, you know, Clark's general life. Like Metropolis was Metropolis, and a little to a lesser extent, Smallville were the easy parts. The only real hard part was because we had to dream from the ground up a lot of the Kryptonian recipes. But like whatchamacallit, you can harken back to Superman for All Seasons, Jeff Loeb, mini, the Jeff Loeb, Tim Sales, God rest his soul, mini. You can harken back to that for a little piece of Americana, which is what we were going for with the cover on this thing. You realize that the first thing that came to mind for me was the, of course, beef bourguignon, being that code word that Clark and Lois have for whenever there's trouble and whatnot. So you've got your staple there, plus you've got Bibble, who cooks apparently everything. So you have inroads just in terms of there are recipes there just to just along the periphery, and you just have to pull them to the surface, add them to the book. And as far as like, we have a Super Friends / Justice League section. So Green Arrow, Oliver Queen's Chili jumps right in there. Chocles jumps right in there. If you're going to make a book like that and you don't have Chocles and his chili in there, what are you doing? So there are natural progressions. And then we just filled out the edges from there.
Do you have a recipe, though, for 40 cakes?
Beg your pardon?
For 40 cakes. There was the famous, I think it was the counting book, maybe, where Lex Luthor, here, I brought it up just for myself, but Lex Luthor took 40 cakes. He took 40 cakes. That's as many as 4 tens, and that's terrible. You're not somebody out there knows the 40 cakes, I'm sure.
Shout off, get in the comments if you know what Alex is talking about, because I think Alex is doing some creative Googling and trying to make us all, he's rubbing our nose in dog food, essentially.
Deep cut. Superman
like ate all the hamburgers. He had like the hamburger eating contest or whatever.
Wow. Yeah, no, you have stumped me on that one. We did not go that route, which is why.
Seeking Superman, Schoikler's claiming knowledge. But he's like that. Seeking Superman says no, that the 40 cakes is a thing.
Ooh, yeah. Okay.
Well, anyway, let's.
It's in there.
40 cakes is too many cakes.
That's
everybody agrees. That's in the text. That's what they say. It's too many cakes that he takes. Anyway, unimportant. Superman the movie is coming out next Friday, not this Friday. It is, which is a huge coincidence with your cookbook. But let's say I'm heading out to the theater to go see Superman on Friday. Is there a recipe from your book that I should make to bring with me, or something I should use to make to celebrate with afterwards? What's the perfect pairing for Superman the new movie?
Nice one. She essentially came up with a Kryptonian crystal, rock candy type.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's got to be rock candy. Yeah.
Exactly. Works perfectly. And anyone gives you static, just shove it in the bag. They'll never know. But yeah, in terms of grabbing your popcorn or buying your popcorn or what have you, throwing that in the bag with some gummy Kryptonian crystals.
Yeah.
Goes a long way. What would help the cause? Help your enjoyment of the overall movie. I think it's James Gunn approved.
Excellent. Yeah. Now that, go ahead, Justin. You were.
I was going to say, Michael Tillman says, pick up a Clark bar at the concession stand, which is good. and then tear it open at just the right time when it's needed. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what's weird? I haven't seen Clark Bar and Superman Bar in the same place at the same time.
What?
Is that weird? Yeah, <it's> weird. Now that you've written a cookbook for Spider-Man and you've written one for Superman, do you have a third character you're interested in doing to complete the trilogy? The dinner to the breakfast and lunch, if you will.
Condiment King. Let's get him out of here.
Oh.
it writes itself, doesn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, we're not going there. Not, you know, if push came to shove and anybody wanted me to do a G.I. Joe based cookbook.
Wow, interesting.
Ends itself, let Roblox take a chapter.
Yeah, Roblox barbecue. I mean, come on.
Yeah, lunchbox.
Don't make up names.
Sandwich.
These guys are horrible. You're making a
hoagie is taco, my favorite joke.
Taco truck is one of my favorite jokes.
Yeah, it's Taco Tuesday. I love when he says that.
He only shows up on that day.
My only regret is I no longer have that figure. I treasure Taco Truck.
Yeah, Taco Truck is one of the best ones.
Close to my heart.
With the kung fu grip.
Jermaine, this is really awesome. Love the book. Yeah. I'm definitely going to pick it up and cook stuff. Before we let you go, is there anything else you want to plug? Obviously, this is the big thing, but anything else folks should check out from you?
Check out the Spider-Man cookbook, which is still available on many book retailers and e-tailers. And whatchamacallit? Hope you get yourself a copy. I've got one of my own. And hope you enjoy. And again, hopefully you find something in there. You can also sneak into the theater and watch Superman when it drops next Thursday/Friday.
I'm definitely sneaking in a big old bowl of chili. Of Oliver Queen's chili into the movie.
As one does when you're going to go.
I love a hot chili in a movie.
Just a pocket chili. I love a pocket chili.
Yeah.
Perfect. Jermaine, thank you so much for coming on. Good luck with the book.
Yeah, congrats.
Thank you. Very fun. Much appreciated. Have a good one, gents.
All right. The book is once again called DC Superman, the official cookbook. Yeah. It is out in stores everywhere right now.
Great stuff.
Inside editions. And if you want to bring some chili to the movie theater, it is the perfect accompaniment. Yeah. But honestly, like, I'm going to get the Superman chili bucket at the theater so I don't have to carry the chili there, you know?
Oh, that's nice. No, and there's no better place to get chili than the AMC.
Come on, man.
Really good, chef. Bring they take the chili. Care the spices. Yeah.
Are
they
you part of AMC C-List where they give you unlimited chili?
It certainly feels like C-List chili. I will tell you that.
It does, it's great.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
This is an announcement to all United States vehicle owners who own a 2003 or newer vehicle with a manufacturer's warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all. With a struggling economy and the cost of living on the rise, Endurance is now offering an affordable, low-cost vehicle coverage plan to the general public. As of today, you could be one of millions of drivers that now may qualify to have your vehicle protected under this coverage and have all future covered auto repairs paid directly to the repair shop for you. You pick your plan, you pick your deductible, you even pick the repair shop. Roadside service, towing, and rental coverage is included. To all United States vehicle owners who own a 2003 or newer vehicle with a manufacturer's warranty about to expire, get your vehicle protected now and save your wallet from costly vehicle repairs. For your free 5-minute quote and to see if you qualify, visit endurancewarranty.com. Endurancewarranty.com.
Well, listen, let's not waste any more time. We have one of our favorite guys coming back to the show. He is writing a bunch of stuff, including Batman and Robin and The Incredible Hulk. Ladies and gentlemen, Philip Kennedy Johnson.
Hey, welcome.
Guys.
Welcome.
Great to see you.
So excited to see you. So excited to talk. We're good. Yes. What?
Oh, I just a quick, you are a Superman aficionado. Just to follow up on our previous conversation, Kryptonian food, what do you think? What's that take from a man in the hive, the creative hive mind of Superman?
Man, if they, I'm probably not the right person to do that book, because I would have been like, you know, my readers know I'm into lore and world building and all that. And
yes.
Stuff based on Earth shit. Just wouldn't like it because there's different animals or different plants.
That's right. You'd be the perfect guy. You'd have some very specific creature based build, different pockets of cuisine in different areas of the planet.
100%. Like, so, like, you know, what's seafood like there? What is, does anything live in those oceans? Like, what's the plant like and plant life like in this continent versus the other continent versus the Phylogen stuff we introduced? So it would be like bonkers.
We're already in too deep. It's great. We just started.
Yeah, exactly. So it's already not fun. That's
no, it is fun. This is what I think is fun.
Yeah, right. So I would love to get into actual Kryptonian food and just like see how weird we can get.
Yeah. Well, not to switch from Kryptonian and Superman stuff to Batman stuff, but I will mention, to keep on the recipe bent, every week on the show we have a professional chef down in New Orleans, Brett Macris, a.k.a.
Stray Bullies.
Runs a great restaurant called Shift. If you're ever down in New Orleans, definitely check it out. Oh, but he either creates or curates a cocktail for us every week. And this week he created one for Batman and Robin called The Best Robin. It is bourbon, cherry liqueur, mezcal, chocolate bitters, fresh rosemary, big orange peel. He does clarify that Damian Wayne isn't old enough to drink. He understands that. but don't be afraid to break the rules. Just don't break the rules. Sorry, I was talking to myself again. That's what he says.
Dude,
at the end there.
You got to send me that. That's amazing. I'm super
absolutely
honored. Yeah. New Orleans food is my best food in the planet.
Oh man, you got to go to his spot. It's called Shift. Really, it's at Brew Carré. Right by Frenchman Street,
New Orleans. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah,
I might have been there.
You might have been in the room. Very good.
Yeah, is it remotely close to the Spotted Cat?
I don't know that place. It's right by R Bar. It's like a block or two from R Bar.
I've totally been there. I bet I've been there.
Yes. Awesome.
New Orleans is the best. It's gross, but it's the best.
Yeah. Truth.
It is the best. A lot of amazing people.
I really do want to get to the books, but there is one other thing I want to bring up before I forget. Last week on the show, we had Jordan D. White on, your editor on Hulk. Yeah, yeah. And so we asked him if he had a question for you. And so his question for you was, how can we collaborate on music?
Like, from, this is Jordan speaking?
This is Jordan speaking.
Like, so how can he and I collaborate on music?
Exactly.
Oh my God, that will be amazing. Does he still puts out those ukulele videos.
Yeah, he does.
He's like a not screwing around ukulele player and singer.
He definitely rocks.
Writes original songs.
I know. I've not actually heard his original stuff. I've only heard his covers.
Oh man, that's hilarious.
Next time I'm in town, I'll bring my horn. And mostly I just play trumpet. I play enough piano to compose, but mostly I just play my axe. So I'll just bring my horn next time.
That's awesome. Great. We will be there with a microphone at least.
Sincerely. Like, so forgive me. Who's like, Pete's not in New York anymore, right? Pete, are you in Baltimore now?
Yeah, I'm in like Baltimore, PA area. Yeah,
Baltimore, PA. No, he doesn't want to tell us his address so we don't visit him. So he's giving us a loose area. Very, very clear.
Baltimore, Virginia. Who even knows?
No one ever says Pennsylvania, Baltimore as a region, by the way, Pete. That's a made-up area. No, it's not a real area, just to be clear.
Towson-ish. 83. Yeah. I know that area. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Are you guys in New York, though? Alex and Justin?
Yep.
Yes.
Dope. Okay. Yeah, we'll do it. I'll be there.
Awesome.
I love it.
Excellent.
I need reasons to keep playing. I'm out of the Army now anyway, so I got to have reasons to play.
Yeah, congrats, man.
Jam it up.
Let's talk about Incredible Hulk, the title proper, though. So issue 27 is coming out July 30th, end of the month. And, you know, you were joking about your world building, but the last issue of the book, you're was actually, like, I think a little bit of a smaller issue. Like, it focused on Hulk, it focused on Bucky, it focused on the character's name's Charlie, right? The kid
Charlie,
who's...
Yeah, Charlie Tidwell. Along.
Yeah.
Charlie Tidwell, technically, but he goes by Charlie.
Yes, who is tagging along with him. So, like, it was a little more focused, but you still got the stuff bubbling in the background pretty much since the beginning of your run about just overarching monster mythology. We've kind of talked about this before, but, like, what draws you to that? What draws you to creating these big, enormous, overarching stories that have deep, almost eldritch mythology to them pretty much every time out of the gate?
Man, I don't know. It's just part of me. it seems like a waste not to, particularly in this medium. Like I just wrapped up a writing class at Kubert School.
Oh, nice. Oh, awesome.
Yeah, it was really fun. I just finished my first class. It's an online course, like just 6 weeks with 12 students, and they were all super dope and really fun. So cool. And one of the critiques that I would sometimes give on the script, they all finished the first issue of a series. Like they finished their first 22 page issue
of an original series.
Yeah. I helped them like come up with some pitches, and we felt like curated them and found a story for each one of them, and they all wrote their first issue. And like,
oh my god, that's,
so cool.
It was a big lift for 6 weeks.
That's intense.
It's quick. Yeah, because they had, I mean, a lot of them didn't know anything about the format yet, and it was a lot, but they all crushed it. So, but very often in a first pass of a story, it'll be, you know, a little like just kind of basic and dull is too strong a word, but it can be a little like too grounded in reality. And sometimes it'd be like, remember, this is a comic. And, like there's no VFX budget. Like or I should say it's an unlimited VFX budget. Like somebody's got to draw this shit either way. So, you know, where's all the monsters and crazy stuff? Like, let's go big, you know, let's make it really like visually interesting. And like, why does this have to be a comic? So, I mean, I feel like comics is just such a Wild West kind of medium in a way that you're not when you're fettered by like budgets and producers and, you know, money people and, you know, directors and audience counts and blah, blah, blah. In comics, you can still kind of get away with whatever you want for the most part. And, I don't know. Comics just make sense to me in that way. I mean, I've written some prose and other things. Like there's some things I want to do in games and film, but for comics, I just love that stuff. And the things that I read in any medium, I just love mythology and lore and just the thought that the world can be bigger than the stuff that we see.
I've just been working on a comic for the first time in my life. And it's super exciting just to sort of, like you're saying, it's an unlimited thing, but the part I found the most interesting working in the field is like it's unlimited, but then all of a sudden you put it on a page and then you put it in the panels. Like you really are, it's two sides of your brain. It's the biggest possible thing, and then you're finding the ways to actually, it's super pinpointed and detailed, and that's why I feel like it's hard to learn that skill as a writer.
It is such a different medium. There was one filmmaker in the class that did some beautiful work, but he also, well, I mean, this is actually a common thing for anyone new to it. They would go, rather than going wild with visual effects stuff, they were going wild with trying to cram too much into a single page or into a single panel. Like it's all about managing the real estate. Comics is about brevity and economy and letting the art carry the story whenever you can. And that is a skill that's super important to learn, like how much fits on the page and how much can I put before it starts to look cluttered or crowded. You're just a pain in the ass to work with for the artist because they have to
draw. Everyone hates you.
Yeah, give them cool stuff to draw and go nuts, but don't go nuts with too many images in one sequence because then they've got to make everything so small it's not cool.
I just want to thank you. I don't really have a question, but I just want to say thank you. It seems like you've been having such a great time with the Hulk. I mean, there was Ghost Rider in there. You really, you know, talk about somatically kind of like doing some amazing stuff. Can you just talk about like the fun you're having with the Hulk and the different kind of stuff you're pulling together? Because, man, it has been a blast. And thank you so much.
Dude, thanks. You know what? Very often when I'm writing Hulk, I'm like, he's going to love this.
Yeah, there it is.
Honestly, sincerely, I think about Pete. That's my Pete book.
Yeah, it's funny how many people come on the show and they're like, "Yeah, I think about you a lot." And I'm like, "What? Why?" Not even that, but I mean, like, but there is something. Jordan said the same thing last week. He was like, "I think about Pete a lot in relation to Venom. This is gonna make Pete so angry. He is a dividing line in the comic book world.
It's true.
He's an icon.
Pete's moving the needle." Yeah, it's, you know, that's funny. I've fallen out of podcasts. I got to get back on and listen to this show again. I always love it when Jordan comes on.
You should listen to the Jordan episode. Is really fun, and he sticks around for audience questions and stuff. Very cool.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Jordan's such a good dude, man.
Yeah. Oh, man. Nice.
Yeah, actually, I think about Pete and, well, all of you, of course. I see Alex most frequently. I see Alex at cons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I associate Alex with the show. But I remember having like kind of heady conversations about like lore behind the scenes stuff with Justin, and Pete's like, blow some shit up, and it's always But yeah, about Hulk though, man. So as you guys know, I've been doing this big series that we're calling Age of Monsters.
Yeah.
And when they first asked me to do Hulk, I was just kind of thinking like, man, what am I gonna do? This is not gonna just copy Immortal, because I just wanted more Immortal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was so good. And kind of my answer to that solution, my solution to that was like, well, we could go harder.
That's exactly what you went deeper and darker and then bigger and harder, I feel like, in a crazy way.
I try to. I mean, the pace changes. Like sometimes I know, like, okay, look, for example, when Donny Cates did his Hulk versus Thor thing.
Oh, yeah.
They basically blew that out into a giant, like an arc of like them just fighting and like crashing planets, and it was like this big, just like smashing toys together in the bathtub, like crazy visual spectacle. And you can't go bigger than that as far as just visual stuff. But for our Hulk Thor issue, we showed like flashbacks to Asgard and to early, like to Midgard back in like Scandinavia back in the day, and Thor's like busting heads alongside humans. And back before he was, in some cases, before he was even before he had Mjolnir. And and Nick hand painted those pages. Those are physical paintings in the world.
Oh, wow.
And they look unbelievable. So we get this lore that ties, we see that the creature that Charlie has become is actually a Valravn, which is an actual story from mythology where it's like a raven slash wolf. Cool. And that's like the first Valravn is the mother of skinwalkers. What we know is skinwalkers in North America.
Right.
So we kind of talk about this big battle that happened between Lycana, the creature that is now Charlie, and Thor that happened in the heavens, and Thor like killed it and knocked it down to earth, and then Native Americans find it and hide it in this cave, and it becomes skinwalker. Like they take turns wearing it, and it becomes skinwalkers to us. But to Thor it's the Valravn. So we got to show all that. So we still have the big fight with Hulk and Thor fighting over the ocean next to, you know, near New York and all that. We try to show as much crazy visuals as we could, but also show the lore that ties it all together. Anyway, I'm geeking out here, but the in this story, all the questions this story was kind of inspired by books I loved when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Like Marvel Team Up, like where's these like really, really short arcs. I mean, of course, I mean, most arcs back then were really short. Almost all of them were. Mm-hmm. Where you just got like a one and done, or two issues, or maybe two or three issues. And I just, my love of comics came from such a kind of a small pile of books. And whenever I didn't have that many consecutive books at all. So whenever I had a story that was just a one and done, or if it was like a two-parter, I had them both. Man. That was like huge.
Yeah.
And I wanted to write a Hulk book that was kind of the same, where it was like just constant jumping on points. So if somebody jumps in and they pick up, you know, issue 12 secondhand someplace, they don't have to buy 11 other issues to figure out what the fuck's going on.
Well, that feels sort of native to the Hulk too, as a character. Like he's a character who is meant to sort of show up at a place, break something, do something. The characters around react, and then he sometimes just jumps to another town, literally.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. No, it's... Yeah, there is... Hulk has a very specific fan base, and sometimes there's a person that's like, where's all the big crazy feats? I want to see him blowing up planets and killing gods and blah, blah. And even, like, we do have a lot of stuff in the book, but not every single issue. Like, the one that you just saw was Bucky showing up and finding, like, basically fighting them just to give Hulk a message, like, something bad is happening and we need you. And then he tells Charlie, you need Banner. You don't need Hulk. You need to find Banner for this. And then she accepts that he is a legit monster. And she's finally pushed away. Like, we just lost Charlie. Charlie is now out of the book as of this issue. At least, you know, for now. I don't want to spoil what's coming. And then the next one is also like a one and done. That's very like a grounded personal story. And then we go big, super. We're about to go as big as it gets. Like, every question that we have posed about Eldest and the Mother of Horrors and all this big cosmic crazy fights that happen in the, you know, endless caverns of, you know, all the big crazy epic visuals, that's about to happen on a scale that I don't think we've seen in the Hulk book. We're about to take a swing that is so fucking big. I think it's the biggest status quo change to Hulk's in his history.
Wow.
That's big exciting. Words, but I do want to talk about the other side of it. Whatever happens to Charlie in the future, I do think adding her to the book and having her consistently part of the book brings another aspect of Hulk that we haven't seen in a really long time, which is just having, like, I mean, obviously she turns into this creature eventually, but like the smaller human companion who is with the Hulk traveling with him. And I think I know the answer to this, but like, what is appealing about that dynamic to you? What makes it important to include in the book?
I brought in Charlie, because it brings out it makes a lot of Hulk's elements really clear. And also it introduces, because Hulk and Banner are almost never in the same place at the same time. Because they're never in the same place at the same time, having a third character that has a different relationship with them both seemed really important, at least for what I wanted to do. So we've kind of got this like hate triangle between Charlie and Banner, where she's this kid. I mean, look, she's me. Okay. Like, she's this kid that kind of got around and like had frustrations as a kid in Kentucky and like just wanted to get the hell out of there and just dreamed about being Captain America's sidekick and just wanted to get out there and be Bucky herself and maybe even be Cap someday. And then when the Avenger comes to actually get her out of there, it's not Cap, it's Hulk. But she always, she still has that Cap patch on her backpack that she wears. But she has a lot of, she has that desire to be big and strong and that need to be strong and to just be awesome. But she also has, she sees Banner, sees his weakness and just has this disdain for Banner because she thinks he's just this lame, skinny, you know, nerd. And Hulk is just like everything she wants to be. But Hulk is kind of like, leave me alone. Like, I don't want, you know, go away, kid, you bother me. He comes to care about her, but he doesn't like say that, you know, he's got like this thing that kind of, he acts annoyed that she's around and Banner's trying to save her all the time. Like, get away from us. You're not safe. And she's like, man, shut up, nerd. And now, of course, that's all changed. And now the series is going to be impacted by her absence. He's going to realize now she's gone. And if you forgive the spoilers for anyone who hasn't read the issue yet, but over the course of the series, when he first saw her, she had this burn on her face that she got at home. And over the course of the series, she, in her monstrous transformation and her resurrection and all that, that Hulk helps, you know, when Hulk saves her, she's, you know, fresh and pretty again, and she's all healthy. And in this most recent issue, she's burned again. Mm-hmm. And now she's a monster and she runs away and she's out in the world purely worse off than she was than when she met Hulk. And now that impacts the story going forward. Mm. So Charlie is, you know, again, there's some fans that just want to see a Hulk book and don't want any other characters getting in the way of the bathtub smashing. But having Hulk in there, excuse me, having Charlie in the mix just gave us some real, really good, you know, opportunities for character that I think are really important. We're going to see that really clearly in this next issue. This next issue is actually really personal to me. Oh. It's about people that I knew in real life. Like there was this, I used to work construction for my stepdad and there was this guy that I worked construction with who was, he just showed up in town one day in a bus, like a gray, flat gray painted bus that he and his wife and baby lived in.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And he would just go and do a job. And I got the impression he was kind of maybe on the run is putting it too strongly, but he had places he couldn't go because of legal shit. Things went bad. So this is kind of about, it's about real people, like real people kind of fall between the cracks, and it gives us a Hulk story that is, it still gets its big Hulk visuals, but it's also about real people. Just kind of express the Hulk's place now that Charlie is gone and his impact on the world and Charlie's belief that he could be a hero, even though he kept saying no.
You write with such, and talking to you over the years, you talk about your work and you write with such emotionality. Like, and you, clearly personal stories influence so much of your work. Every time we talk to you, I feel like, well, so I knew this person, and that's who this character is, and that's why Superman or whoever you're writing is feeling that way. Are you coming at it from, like, talk to me about how you're getting to the emotion. Is the emotion first, or you're, like, sitting down to write a Hulk story, and then does it come to you, or when do you access the emotionality of it?
Sometimes... I don't know this. So the story, like the general, like big picture arcs that I want to tell are kind of in place. And then as the story comes together, everyone writes what they know, even if they don't mean to. Right.
Yeah.
I think I heard, who was it? I think it might've been Greg Rucka. It was either him or Brubaker. There was a panel. I had them both on there. And around the same time I heard them on a podcast. And I can't remember which one of them said this, but somebody asked one of them in a class or at a con or something, should I consciously write stories about, you know, experience, my own experiences? And their answer was no, because you will anyway.
Yeah.
Even if you don't mean to, you do. And I know a lot of people, and as those stories are coming together, sometimes an idea will just kind of float to the surface, like this is something that needs to be told. So yeah, it's kind of a mix. Sometimes I'll have the idea comes from like the general arc that I want to tell. Sometimes it's from a memory of something that happened to me or someone I knew or whatever. We'll kind of float to prominence as the story is coming together. Sometimes it'll be just like a title or something crazy, something just kind of that I notice sticks out to me. Hmm. So it's a big mix. I don't know. I'm sorry, it's not a very satisfying answer, but it's different every time.
And it sort of makes sense that way. Like, that's how emotions work. We're not in charge of them all the time.
Exactly. We're not in charge. That's how I feel. I feel like the stories kind of write themselves through your experiences. There's a line in my first issue of Superman Book of El coming out this year. There's a line that he speaks that my brother spoke at his daughter's wedding. Oh, that really stuck out to me. He was talking about how he just kind of obsessed over a little detail, every decision he made as a dad, trying to make sure she turned out a certain way and just really trying to curate her whole life growing up, make sure he was very careful and thoughtful and conscientious. And seeing how well she turned out, how beautiful she is now, he said something like, I didn't need to worry about any of that crap. Like, flowers just know how to grow.
Oh, man.
And that line, flowers know how to grow, really stuck in my mind. And now it's a Superman line.
Ah, that's cool. I love that.
Yeah. Song. So things like that will just kind of like when they make sense in context. I don't force that stuff. It has to find its own organic place. But when it's there, I do have some things that kind of float to the surface.
Those lines know how to grow.
Exactly. They do.
We have a couple of questions here from YouTube. Oh, cool. I wanted to bring in. GR Liu says, is the current Hulk an amalgam Hulk, meaning all alters' personalities are combined into one Ultra Hulk? If so, does that explain why we haven't seen other alters? And he mentions like Joe Fixit, Green Scar, Savage Hulk, right, etc.
Man, I hope this is not a disappointing answer, because I know that people really care about this. I just don't give a shit about that personality stuff at all. And I'll tell you why though. And that's not to mean I'm dismissing your question. I'm not. I'm telling you the truth. The reason why I don't obsess about which one of them it is because every one of those personalities that has been created over the years has been to fit the tone that writer needed for that particular story.
Yeah.
Those exist, those appear as the writer needs them to tell a certain kind of story. So for this particular story, Hulk needed to be menacing and scary. He's the monster of the movie, the way that, well, in a way, similar to how Stan Lee and Kirby, those guys initially conceived of the character. So instead of being the "you wouldn't like me if I'm angry" thing, it's like he emerges when he's not welcome. He emerges when Banner needs to be punished for something or whatever. Like he's the creature from Smile or from It Follows or mm-hmm. whatever the thing behind his eyes stalking him from inside of him, you know? Wow. So in a story like that the baby talk thing just wouldn't work at all. Yeah. You know, where it's like Hulk angry, like Hulk sad, Hulk sleepy, whatever. It's not, you can't have a voice like that and make him be menacing and scary. So, sure. And also, I also drew on stories like the first Conan film, Conan the Barbarian, yeah. where he doesn't speak at all for like a ton of that movie. And he's so, and even when he does speak, it's so short. And yeah. To me, that's just key. That's just key to making him, to giving him that gravitas. When they did the sequel, we don't talk about that, kind of just wrecked everything. And then even the Jason Momoa movie, like it's not, he doesn't have the same gravitas. He looked apart, but then when he starts talking, he's like got this, he's just talking like a bro. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of ruins the gravitas, you know? So I wanted, whenever Hulk is speaking in this book, I just crafted the voice of Hulk according to what I needed him to be for this book. And that's the truth. So yeah. I'm very sorry if that like breaks something for you, but it is. So in a way, the answer is yes. There is it is very influenced by what people call Demon Hulk now. It's influenced right. by Savage Hulk. It's influenced by, it's probably most impacted by the Green Scar. Like nice. I really liked how menacing and how just the gravitas that he had in that arc and how he seemed so powerful. So probably the most prominent voice in his arc now is Green Scar. And if anything, maybe the character Scar himself, like his son.
Yeah.
Like the way that in that sequel series that they did with Scar up on the remnants of Sakaar, he was so like, I don't know, he's felt like Conan, you know? Yeah. So he's a lot like that. But now he's kind of got his sights set on Banners, like hurting him and just wanting to be left alone and all that. Although that is now slow. We're now getting to the part in his character arc where it's starting to change.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to say that I think that's one of the joys of the Hulk, frankly, like as a lifetime long Hulk fan, how malleable yeah. the concept is, that what you're saying, I think, is 100% true for your run. And then somebody else can come in next and be like, nah, none of that's true. And I don't think exactly. that contradicts anything that you're saying in your run. Same exactly. as what you're doing doesn't contradict Al Ewing or Peter David or anything like that. It's all these very specific takes on a unifying theory of the character that is pushed to the side for a new unifying theory, and that's okay.
Yeah, like the way, you know, people used to measure intelligence with, you know, the IQ test, and you get a numerical score, and this is how smart you are. And if you have 109, someone else has 102, that means the 109 guy's smarter than you. And that is just such a stupid chainsaw tool to determine anything like that. And now there's, you know, there's the education guru Howard Gardner came out with like the the multiple intelligences book. There's actually seven versions of that, and the truth, that's way closer, but it's still not true. It's still more nuanced than that, right? Like you can't just give somebody a number about how smart they are. And that codification of intelligence kind of reminds me of the way that people tried to codify who Hulk is. Like, is this? Which, okay, so now he talks differently in this one. So does that mean this is a new personality? And I understand because we're trying to make it fit, like, you know, certain kinds of mental disorders. So I get why that is. But people trying to put a name on a specific version of Hulk, to me, is counterproductive because the truth is that people are just given those names after the fact. And then, like, sometimes right. a writer can use them if they want to. Like, if it is helpful for me to use Joe Fix, that I can do that because that is now a tool that's available to me. Mm-hmm. But those are just names that people have come up with kind of as the story's being told. Like the truth is more complicated.
It's really funny to think, like, it's true to our lives, I think, as people, where it's like, yeah, for a while I was a Vegas bouncer. And then another time I rode a stone ship back to Earth to get my revenge on the planet exactly. because I was mad.
Yeah, don't forget, he's so angry he stood on the front of the ship. You know,
that's right, man. That's exactly what I was referencing, Pete.
Well, thank you.
Pete, the barometer of comics, understanding what I'm talking about. the number one man of comics. But, I mean, it's like I worked at Burger King, and now I, in my version of riding on a stone ship, is having two children and a puppy.
Oh, wow. That's a beautiful story.
Wow.
Speaking of families, I'd love to switch it over and talk about Batman and Robin, because one of the things I love about this series that you're writing is this relationship between Batman and Robin, and this chance at, you know, you talk about a parent overthinking and stuff like this, and like as a fan, you're just kind of yelling at Batman, being like, just share your feelings, you asshole. But it's such a great run. It's so, I love you're digging into, and kind of like how you're talking about these two characters. Can you talk a little bit about like Batman for you and kind of like Robin and what you're trying to, you're trying to say with this relationship? That's,
Yeah, man. So thanks. I appreciate you reading all this stuff. It's Batman and Robin. That was a like just dream come true book. My son growing up, as he was getting older, was like the biggest Batman fan ever. And he came to Superman too, but when he was first old enough to like anything, he loved Batman.
Yeah.
And so we would play together, and I was always Robin. Like we did Batman and Robin stuff.
Ah, that's so funny.
He had this awesome like Batman 66 cape and cowl that he wore.
Oh, wow.
Like, every day, man. Like, and not just at home, but like, you know, to the restaurant, to the
it's amazing.
Exactly. He constantly wore it, and he just ran his butt off. If he ever gets a track scholarship, it'll be because of that cape. So we constantly played, and getting to write that book now is such an amazing thing. Plus, I mean, as a dad too, because I mean, writing Superman as a dad, he's just like the ideal father.
Yeah.
And Batman's not that thing. Batman is like he raises warriors and soldiers and detectives and you know, it's just a very intense kind of thing. And I kind of have those tendencies too, not in a way that is lame or toxic, I hope, but but my son does have like a list of stuff to do every day, and it's to keep him productive. And I have my own list too. Like there's like a dry erase board at home. I have my list and he has his list. And I try not to overdo it. But he's, I have those tendencies, and it kind of just thinking about what it must be like. I mean, we've all worried about like disappointing our dad or trying to live up to our dad in some way back when all that stuff was magical. And, before he knew that he's a human being. Yeah. And, it's just, what if your dad was actually Batman? human achievement, and you have to live up to that. And Damian's an interesting character because he was already so confident when he came to Gotham, and he didn't come to be Bruce Wayne's son. He came because he was Batman's son. So that's a really interesting dynamic. I mean, like neither one of them really know, like Damian doesn't know how to be a son, and Batman doesn't know how to be a son or a father. And they're just, I love how busted they both are, even while being such high achievers and both trying to be human and have a good father-son relationship, you know, even while doing this crazy shit that they do.
Well, you have this overarching villain for the first arc called Memento, who he has sort of like a little bit of a plague doctor costume going on.
Yeah.
He may or may not be somebody from Batman's past. They're playing with the overall mystery that's going on there. Why? And maybe this will come out at the end when we finally find out of Memento's deal. But why is this the right villain for your take on Batman and Damian?
I wanted a villain. I wanted them to solve a mystery that encompasses both Robin's time now at that age and Batman when he was practically at that age himself. Huh. So you see Bruce Wayne going by the name Young Jack, going by another name in England when he was on his walkabout, pursuing this, like studying with a great detective, pursuing the serial killer. And then we see him again later. He finds Young Jack again later in life, and now Robin is at that age, and he tried to get Young Jack back in the day, and now he's trying to get Robin too. Like he punishes his, well, depending on, you'll see what happens, but yeah, it appears that he's punishing his pursuer, Atticus Bly, Professor Bly, by going after his students, or their, you know, his, essentially his kids. And then later it's Batman. He goes after his son. So anyway, it's just seeing them both at similar ages and giving them like a colleague, a comrade that is with both of them. Like back in the day, Young Jack was pursuing him alongside Catherine Lautrec. And then now Batman's doing that and Robin gets nowhere very well. And I don't know. It's just so fun, man. I love seeing them at different ages and, or at the same age and comparing them both and putting them alongside the same characters at different ages. And also, as far as just the vibe of the book and the aesthetic, that's kind of the aesthetic I wanted for Gotham. I wanted Gotham to be like, you know, scary and you know, dark and rainy and foggy with blimps overhead. And it just felt like the right move. So I kind of came up with this character that's sort of a, like somewhere between, oh God, what's his name? The famous occultist, Aleister Crowley and Jack the Ripper.
Oh, wow.
Like Aleister Crowley, Jack the Ripper, and like Moriarty, you know, to Atticus Bligh's Sherlock Holmes.
I think, forgive me if I'm wrong about this, but I think in the last issue, Etrigan, the demon, guest stars. His dialogue, how annoying is that to write?
Does it get stuck in your head?
Yeah. I kind of, going back, I wish I'd like changed up the meter a little bit.
Okay.
Because the meter is the same for everything, every single one. I was like, damn, I've really done a lot of these now. Because, I mean, yeah, so from the very beginning, the Etrigan thing was always going to be there. That was part of the tip-off. Like that, I wanted the reader to wonder if Etrigan is, excuse me, if Memento is actually a demon or if they are just a person under there or both. And so from the very jump, Memento has been speaking in rhyme. And eventually it kind of comes together that, you know, Jason Blood is also in town and Etrigan speaks this way as well. So they interrogate Jason Blood, and there's this really cool scene, like I guess you guys probably read it, like where they're interrogating Jason Blood, and he stands in the mirror and they kind of finish each other's sentences, and so he's interrogating Etrigan through the mirror, and that was just really fun. I love it. I love doing it. As you guys know, I love putting songs and poetry in my books, and it was just a fun way to do it.
Yeah. I've got another question here from the comments. Seeking Superman says, as great as you have been writing Damian and your love for Superman, do you have a Super Son story that you would like to tell?
Ooh.
Well, it's funny you should ask that. keep reading Batman. How about that?
All right. Wow. Hey, great.
Good.
Batman and Robin. Keep reading Batman and Robin. We're about to wrap up the Memento arc in a way that I hope is very satisfying to everybody. There's an answer to the mystery about who this person, who Memento is, and all that stuff. And then we are about to see. So we've been seeing Robin kind of question whether or not he even wants to be Robin anymore. He has this big shake up to his character at the beginning of the arc. And he's like, what we call his Harvey Knight, where they kind of have their shake up and they have to figure out if they're even willing to go on with this gig.
Yeah.
Robin gets his Harvey Knight and he's like, I don't know if I'm up for this. So at the end of the Memento arc, he makes his decision, and now we're about to see another arc that's very different, shorter. So I guess just a regular, like trade paperback length arc with another character that I'm really excited. I've been dying to write this character for a long time. So we're introducing a new character called the Quiet Man. It's kind of a new hitter in Gotham.
That kind finally. This is what Gotham needs.
Exactly. Need some more bad guys.
Yeah.
But not just a pure bad guy. Someone a little more interesting, I hope. Cool. Yeah, so the Quiet Man comes to town, and there's some cool, maybe not mythological, but like some cool lore stuff to play with. But he's an interesting character that fleshes out the history of Gotham a little more and leads us to a reunion with another Rogues Gallery character that I'm really excited to bring back, that I feel like has been a little underserved, I think is super cool.
You mentioned this earlier, but Adventures of Superman, the Book of El, is, I believe, finally coming out on September 3rd, and that is continuing and presumably wrapping up your run on Superman. What's it like, I mean, just in general, finally having that come out on stands?
God, I'm super stoked, man. There's all these threads that I mean, too many threads to organically wrap up in my Action Comics run. There's still some hanging out there that I want to, you know, tie up and satisfy in this run. So, 12 more issues coming. And there's also
great, like, though. 12 issues to wrap it up is awesome.
I know. Yeah. I'm really excited. No, everyone's been super supportive of DC. It's going to finish off my second omnibus. My first omnibus comes out next week.
Awesome.
Yeah, so omnibus, actually, you know what? I don't have any in this room, but there's a, you know what? I can do whatever I want. I'm going to.
Yeah, you can.
Get it.
Oh,
no. We're like, definitely go get it.
Yeah.
Technology immediately fails.
Nope, not working. Gotta hook it back up again.
Very funny. Go get it and come back, and then we'll hook it up back up.
Hello?
You can hear me, hello?
Yes, yeah, we can hear you.
Yes.
I'm breaking everything. All right. I'm grab the book while we talk here.
Oh, he's going mobile.
Ooh, this is like train spotting. I love it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, in only one particular way, right, Alan? It's great, real.
Welcome to my house.
Yeah, it's a lovely home. We're taking cribs.
Well, good woods, yeah. BKJ cribs.
All right, here we go. Check this shit out. Oops, that was it. Hit the floor.
Oh, no, don't trash it.
I thought you went to a different room that looks exactly the same. But it makes sense that you just came back to the room you're in.
Wow.
Oh, look
at how thick that is.
Right?
That's awesome. Damn. That's so cool.
It is pretty sexy.
Yeah, that's a beautiful cover, too. That's him on War World in the barbarian costume. Awesome.
Yeah, thanks. It turned out amazing. I'm so happy with it. On the top of all the actual, like, the book, if you remember on War World, it showed like little snippets of Clark Kent's journal when he was up there.
Yeah.
We've got like pages and pages of that.
There
was a lot more than actually made it onto the page. So we get to put all that in here.
Oh, that's awesome.
There's a giant map of War World.
Oh, nice. Look at that.
And there is.
Like, is there another writer making as many maps as you are? Dude, you're the map king of the comic book industry.
I love maps.
Yeah,
dude,
right.
I'm a sucker for maps.
Every one of the things on this map is like a little number, and there's a legend at the bottom that names them. and those all have their descriptions. It talks about like the history of War World.
Pages of descriptions. It's amazing.
This goes on. Like there's stuff in the book where War Zunes are speaking, and we printed it without translations, but I actually like built languages for these various tribes of War Zunes up there.
No doubt you built those languages.
It shows some of the glossaries. It shows like it translates some of the conversations.
Wow,
that's awesome.
So it's an amazing volume. So that's volume one.
So this concludes the Book of El. Concludes your second volume. Your omnibus.
Yes. Wow. That's as we planned it so far. It's going to conclude my second volume, and there'll be a lot more back matter in that too. So every issue of Book of El will have some pages of back matter at the end of the issues.
Wow.
So there's a literal Book of El that charts like the lineage of Superman and like the adventures that the things that happened after his departure from Earth and what happens to his lineage, what happens on Earth, what happens when he comes back. There's like lots of stuff, and it's like I can't wait to reveal who wrote it, and it's just so cool.
Wow.
So there's going to be a little bits of narration throughout the book in which we see glimpses of the Book of El, but then there's also pages of it at the end that have additional stuff, and it's going to be super, super dope.
Wow. We do have a very niche question here, but what kind of languages are they? Like, I guess, how do you actually construct a new language for a comic book?
So these are what you would call a conlang, which means constructed language. Like Dothraki in Game of Thrones is a common language. It just means new language, basically. But it's like quote unquote fictional, but it exists. There are some fascinating conlangs out there, man. People just do the most creative, amazing shit. I'm so impressed with that community and the stuff that people do. I would not sully the word conlang by saying that I have made entire language. Because I mean, they make books. There are people that make languages that have thousands and thousands of words. And my glossaries of War Zune language are very modest, like maybe it's a few hundred a piece. And I just show.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, that's embarrassing. Come on. Make up some more words.
As far as the sound of each one, I will look up, I'll look up dead languages sometimes and find, or really obscure ones, and kind of look at how they find ones that have very unusual kind of sound or structure to them. And I'll base them very loosely on that. Like that seems to fit the vibe. And the written language look good or sound good is just to kind of repeat it over and over and over. Like imagine that you were speaking this way your whole life. Things have a tendency to get shortened or softened or kind of like you know, the sharp edges get knocked off. So kind of repetition is kind of how you make them sound more natural.
The depth at which you approach comics, both literary and emotionally, is unbelievable.
well, thanks. I mean, it matters. That is, like,
I know you think.
Agreed.
It is agreed. Crazy. It's so exciting.
No, it does. Oh, I think, like, just to plus it up for a second, something like the story that you're telling, it really does make it feel lived in. So it's not just Superman visits barbarian world X and they're just kind of existing around him. It gives these things around the corners so that everybody has their own story. But then also I imagine as a writer, doing all that work allows you to be like, oh, Superman goes here. Oh, wait, I know this area. I know what's happening here and who these people are. That's who he's going to interact with. So doing
it's generative. It gives you more ideas when you're working on it. It's like, oh, this is helping me think about the next thing.
That is 100% true. It does. Like, okay, for example, there was a sometimes the artist will add something that then turns into lore. Cool. Like there was a moment where we see when Superman is enslaved on Warworld, we see him and one of the other ones go down into the inner core of Warworld, and we see that there's like stone and flora down there. Like it's not all made of metal like we thought. And there are these giant worms that because I had asked a question like, is there an atmosphere up there? I mean, I guess there has to be because they're breathing and talking. Yeah. So if there is, then there must be moisture. There must be precipitation of some kind. So we have these electrical storms and where's the fucking air come from? It's not oxygen, is it? Like if it is, does that mean they're plants? So basically we created the great worms and they give off. So they feed bodies into these giant pits that the worms consume.
Wow.
And the worms create this gas that then surrounds Warworld, and that's what they breathe. So they're breathing like worm parts.
Yeah.
Sweet. And that's
you're
what,
really
that's what
again telling me what a horrifying place. This should be in bad. The front of the book. Yeah.
But that's so we had to kind of that all kind of came from the question of like, okay, well, why is the planet red? How are they breathing? But also, why does this hole that Ricardo Federici drew look like this? And it looks like this giant drilled out this hole. And I was like, okay, so why did they have done that? They did that to vent the gas from the worms to the atmosphere so they can breathe. And then eventually it rains a little bit, and that's why the whole planet is red, because it's covered in metal ships and it's all like these lakes of rust and everything. So, anyway.
Derek has a great question. Could the worms be used in cuisine? Like we're getting into the next cuisine thing that we need to get to. What are they eating?
Totally could. They totally could. They have to. Yeah, you got to find a dead one. Mm-hmm. Yes, they totally could. Somebody asked a question on here. So the questions, the language doesn't have grammar, but they are phonetically consistent. They do have grammar, and they are phonetically consistent.
Wow. oh man, I like that you pulled that. You're like, don't fuck.
Yeah, yeah. there are conjugations of verbs and all kinds of stuff like that. And also there's one tribe that they grew up in this really radioactive like swamp kind of, and so their mouths are all screwed up, and so they speak differently. So their languages are the way they pronounce is different. So they have their own language based on that one, but basically they speak without lips essentially.
Wow.
So anyway.
And this is going to be available on Duolingo next week.
Yes, sign me up. I want to speak the lipless language. I'm right.
right.
This is obviously a lot of stuff you have coming out. I know you have a couple of other things that I'll mention really quickly. You've got Bring On the Bad Guys Abomination is out July 16th. I was curious about that just because this is a series of one-shots that are all kind of the same mini-series, which is the new format that Marvel is doing. How do you approach that? Like, is it they tell you, hey, you're writing Abomination, this is where it starts, this is where it ends? Are you working with the whole team? What's actually involved in crafting an issue like that?
So that series is cool because, okay, so Mark Guggenheim.
Yeah, the Goose.
Good friend, and he for those who don't know, he's of Arrowverse fame.
Yes.
He's writing some comics now, and they're great. And he conceived of this Bring On the Bad Guys series, which is kind of like loose. It's like a homage to an old thing that came out like a long time ago. And there, as you say, there's these one shots, and let's see. It was actually a thing that I thought was so cool is this is a, it's a chance for the junior editors on the major books to lead their own book. Like the one shots were all assigned to a junior editor. That's usually like more of an assistant. And I thought that was great. So I wanted to be a part of it. So they offered me the Abomination issue because I'm a Hulk guy and it's kind of my turf if I want it.
Nice.
And I told Caden, my assistant editor on Hulk, I told Caden that I would do this book with her and it's been really good. And the guy, you know, it's part of Mark's series, part of Mark's event too. So I wanted to be a part of that because Mark's a great dude and a good friend.
And is there anything else? I know Hellhunters ended for the moment, right, with issue 5.
Love
for the moment.
For the moment,
really enjoyed.
Is there going to be more Hellhunters?
Hell yeah! Right. I can't. I mean, it's not written or greenlit yet, but yes, I'm going to make that happen for sure.
Nice. I will say it's actually been, and I know this is part and parcel with the universe, but we were talking about World War II Ghost Rider showed up in, not Avengers, Thunderbolts Doomstrike, I think.
Yes.
Yep.
Which is very cool. Like, it must be kind of a cool feeling when you're like, oh, people are picking up this ball that I created and running with it.
It's the best. It's so cool to see that happen. See my friends take the book and do stuff with them.
I feel like it's so hard to get a character over that line, though. Like, I feel like, especially now, there's so much happening. Characters, they're like, oh, that's really interesting, really cool character, and it just doesn't live beyond the arc or the series.
Yeah, I know.
And the crossover, that's when you know you hit some gold, when someone picks it up, I feel like.
I know, I love it. I'm super proud of that character. And honestly, that was a really personal one, too. Well, I mean, not that one, came from a place that I was not personally impacted by, but there was the... After the Uvalde shooting in Texas, I'm sorry to bring it down, such a downer story.
No.
But there was a dad and one of those kids was on Twitter and was reaching out about, not to me personally, but said something about putting their kid in a comic book. And somebody put it on my radar and I reached out to him and we talked about it. And so this kid, Uzziah, who died in that shooting, was the biggest Spider-Man fan fucking ever. And there's pictures of him like perched on the kitchen like countertop and the Spider-Man stuff and like him with his cousin like with a mask on, and he was just huge Spider-Man fan. And he liked all the same stuff that my son liked and likes, and he was about his age. So I found out what I could about Uzi and kind of made this character inspired by him. His name is Leo in the book. Uzi was a Leo in real life, and he was very proud of it. He liked that sign. So this kid's name is Leo, and he's always got a Spider-Man shirt on. And he's Leo is the, so instead of like Johnny Blaze is the vessel for the spirit of vengeance, right?
Right.
In our Hulk series, it's Leo. And so instead of him actually becoming Ghost Rider 44, Ghost Rider 44 is like his guardian angel.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So in the beginning, where the War Devils come after him and all that, and his mom is hiding him under the trailer and all that, then this beat up old bike kind of flares to life, and Ghost Rider 44 comes back and make it right. So, and all of Hellhunters was just a spin out from that series to show Sal Romero's origin, like where he came from, and show him when he was alive and what happened back in the day, and show him in the context of an Inglorious Bastards kind of shoot him up story. Mm-hmm. Like my own Nazi kill fantasy. I got a Nazi hangout. But Hellhunters is a total passion project. I could not love that book more than I do. And I want to do more of it. And I'm going to, like, they're very supportive at Marvel about it. And we're going to do more for sure.
Awesome.
And we'll get Leo in there too, because Leo's the one that kind of makes the rules. So nice. Leo, he needs Leo's permission to do anything, because he's attached to Leo, you know.
That's cool. Awesome. Is there anything else? Obviously, again, we've talked about a lot of stuff here, but anything else you want to plug?
I do have a couple really cool things coming, but I can't talk about them yet. But I'm gonna have a really big year. Even the stuff that people know about is really cool and exciting. I'm so proud of Hulk. What we're about to do in Hulk is insane. I mean, Marvel has been so supportive getting this over the plate and making sure it's going to hit big. Biggest status quo change in Hulk's history ever.
Wow.
Batman and Robin, this new arc is going to be so fun and dope.
I cannot wait.
So, and Adventures of Superman, Book of El, of course, is a passion project. I mean, even if that was all I'm doing, I would be so proud of all those. I do have a creator-owned book that's greenlit, that's coming out. Like, I'm excited about that too.
Oh man!
And another big two thing that can't wait to announce.
Yeah, you are going to have a huge year. This is going to be great.
Congratulations! Yeah,
thanks, I appreciate that. Well, you guys too, man. Seeing the show take off has been the best, man.
Oh, thank you.
So, congrats for all the success over here.
We always love talking to you, and hopefully, we'll talk soon about whatever else is coming up.
Yeah, cannot wait. I love it at all.
All right,
you guys too. All right, take care.
Bye.
All right, there we go. Once again, Philip Kennedy Johnson. A couple of things you can check out. Batman and Robin number 23 is coming out July 9th. Incredible Hulk number 27 out July 30th. And I wrote these down out of order, but Bring on the Bad Guys Abomination is out on July 16th. Oh, we also mentioned Adventures of Superman, the Book of El, which is out on September 3rd.
Wow, man.
There you go.
I'm so excited.
I also am excited.
That's it. You know, that's what you need. You need stuff to look forward to. You know what I mean? Good stuff. Great conversation, man.
And you know what also is good stuff is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch, and we will get to them. Hi, Justin.
Hey.
Welcome back.
Shout. Sorry, Philip. My family turned on the microwave, which is right next to the router, and it shut down the internet for a full minute. I went out there, and I was like, hey, what happened? They're like, we're making popcorn. Oh, no. And I was like, I'm in the country. So.
Yeah, dude, he got so mad, he just left, man. He was just like,
he walked
Justin
out.
Won't even say goodbye to me. Yeah, he stormed out.
This is it.
No. We already got a couple of questions coming in, and we got one here from Schreikler as a super chat. On YouTube.
What is that?
Thank you for the super chat.
Schreikler dropping that cash.
Last week somebody did a super chat and everybody was very intrigued by it. So Schreikler, appreciate the super chat as well. His audience question is, what would your cookbook be? Theme? Food? Great question. If you're going to do a cookbook, what would the theme be? Justin, would you be the JT Sizzler cookbook?
Ooh.
Yeah, all sizzle grills. sizzles. Definitely.
Everything that sizzles.
We talked about the sort of doing the research for cooking, but I feel like there's so many, like you get into so many little pockets and find little funny payoffs, like the Johnny Storm Spidey fruit pie. Like getting into those little esoteric things is where the fun is, I think.
40 cakes? You could do 40 cakes.
Stop. No one knows what you're talking about.
They're making that up.
It's very
it's
famous.
It's fucking bullshit, dude.
It's very
Stop
famous.
That. You read like a Dr. Seuss while reading a comic book and had a dream.
Here's what I'll do. I'm going to stick with this. Lex Luthor's 40 Cakes Cookbook. That's my pick.
Great. I'm going to partner with Stray Bullets, and it's going to be called Anything You Make, I'll Eat. Just because Stray Bullets is an amazing chef, and everything he makes is just amazing.
There was a question back here. I'm looking for it now. I don't know. I'll look for it again. This is from Derek Mainhart. Did any of you ever meet interview Jim Shooter? For those who don't know, he is former Marvel editor-in-chief. He was a writer for Legion of Superheroes for years, Superman, Supergirl. He helped create Secret Wars. He also helped create the direct market with comic book shops by putting Dazzler there first instead of just on spinner racks. He also got in a lot of fights with a lot of people and was also smacked with accusations of homophobia for certain plot lines that he wrote. So controversial figure in comics, but also completely changed the comic book industry in a huge way. This is a long way of saying, I don't think so actually, but he is a legend. And he passed away yesterday of esophageal cancer, unfortunately, as was reported by Mark Wade. So very sad. This is from Stanley. Are you going to go?
Justin, did you want to say something? Because it seems like you're about to say something, but then you don't.
Justin is frozen.
Okay, all right. We'll come back to you, buddy.
Yes. Are you going to see the Superbad movie early? Yes.
Have you already seen it?
No, I'm seeing it next Tuesday, though. So that's actually good news for you. You're not going to be here next Tuesday.
Yeah.
And you would hate it if I said anything. So I'll have seen it by next week's show.
They made another batch of popcorn because they burned the first one. I was like, stop making popcorn.
Why is this affecting your Wi-Fi? That's crazy.
Because it's right next to the router. Look it up. Microwave. Look up 40 cakes right. first, fam.
First.
And then look up how microwaves affect the internet. It's not good.
Dude, what's hilarious is you have no pull in your own home. You know what I mean?
I was like, hey, guys, oh, that's crazy. Don't make popcorn. And then it breaks again, and I'm like, what? And they're like, yeah, we just had to make one because the other one burned. I was like, knock it off!
Knock it off!
Do they have enough popcorn for everybody? Because I think everybody in your family should get separate popcorn.
Seemingly, that's what's happening. Because I'm like, you know, we used to make it on the stove, the old-fashioned way.
Yeah. I'm not that excited about the Superman movie.
That was going to be my follow-up question, is how are you guys feeling about a week and change out from Superman? There's obviously a lot of discussion about Superman versus Fantastic Four, but Pete's not interested because he doesn't feel like we need another Superman movie. This is, by the way, the same man who has seen all 3/4 Punisher movies, I believe.
Yeah, but numerous times, and yeah, continuously watch the TV show. You know what I mean?
Definitely don't connect those two thoughts at all. Justin, what about you? How are you
Never
feeling?
Never do.
I'm very excited. My guy John Gabris is coming up here into the woods.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he was going to be in it, and then I would have gone seen it then.
Not going to be in it. But the first thing he said to me, he was like, "When are we going to see the Superman movie?" I was like, "Because I'll tell you what, the closest movie theater, and I'm not even talking IMAX. I mean, literally a room that shows the movie is a full hour drive away. But we going.
Wow! Look at that dedication.
Yeah, I'm excited. Early word, they had some preview screenings, and those are always dicey because nothing against people. I know this is a job like everything else, but it's all influencers who are like, got to see it early, can't say too much. But it seems positive, like the advanced stuff coming out is people comparing it exactly how they're selling it, like very Silver Age, comparing it to like Superman the Animated Series, and then it like gets lighter, goofier, funnier. So,
goofier?
Yeah.
I love that. All of this stuff I've heard, and I've been trying to avoid a lot of it. I actually haven't watched the recent trailer drop.
I haven't watched any of the trailers.
Because I don't want to know any more than what we know. But the little dribs and drabs I'm hearing feel right to me. So, because
when
I'm
think
happy.
Superman, I think goofy. You know what I mean? Just silly shit.
But it is that a little bit. We're talking about Man of All Seasons here. Like, that is a little goofy. It is a little bit Americana. It's a little bit purposefully corny in a way that is positive and hopeful. And, like, that's a flavor I'm interested in.
The Christopher Reeve movies were, like, very purposefully, the producers tried to make them as much comedies as hard as possible. And 100%. It was always Richard Donner being like, no, make it more serious. Yeah. And they're like, just throw this comedy bit here. You remember the Donner thing cut. With, like, the Leaning Tower of Pisa, where...
Of course. That's one of the things I remember the most about those movies.
That's goofy.
This stuff's my God.
But that stuff, that sticks in my memory. As a kid, I was like, that's cool. I would do that if I was Superman. Seeking Superman in the comments says, Silver Age Superman was goofy, and it is true. Superman has comedy in the DNA of it. Yeah. So I'm happy we can see it.
We do have a question from Seeking Superman. As a new viewer, how often do you put out new content, and are they all live shows?
80 times a week we're throwing out content.
Feels that way.
Dude, so Alex is a machine, dude. He just cranks shit out. Dude, if he reads a comic, he's going to do a fucking video, and I hope you like it. You know what I mean? So, like, the guy's cranking out stuff to try to get, you know, people excited.
Fight against the looming specter of death. Is that what you're going to say, Pete?
Oh, wow.
That's what we're doing. Yeah. That's how we're staying alive.
To answer your question seriously, we do this live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. where we have guests. We also do a Stack podcast that's also put on YouTube. That's Wednesdays at 9 a.m. where we review a bunch of comic books that are out on Wednesday. We have a bunch of other spinoff shows as well. We do a Marvel show. We just put up our review of the first 3 episodes of Ironheart, and either later this week or at some point, we'll put up the review of the next 3 episodes. We'll definitely be doing Superman as well as, I assume, Peacemaker when that's coming up. So we try to cover the comic book TV shows as well.
Yeah, we got Fantastic Four coming. We have a couple comic book-based one-off podcasts that I think we're going to do coming up that I'm pretty hyped for. So lots of stuff coming.
Yeah, there you go. But definitely every Tuesday night and Wednesday morning. We definitely have videos, and then there's a bunch of other stuff in there. Ooh, we got a hard Sophie's Choice. Matthew Schofield says, you can only choose to see one Superman or Fantastic Four. Which one are you choosing?
That's
Pete,
a great,
you have to choose one.
That's a great question. It's funny. Alex and I are coming Sinners. From one side of this, and Pete's coming from the other.
Yeah. He's like, how do I skip out of both?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a tough
Blade
call.
It's out.
Because I'm curious what you're going to say, Alex, because I feel like you are also like both of these ideas. You like these characters.
Yeah, but
and here's the...
go ahead.
Oh, go.
Finish what you're saying.
No, I want to hear yours first, actually.
Mine would be Superman, probably.
Yeah.
Because...
I knew it. You like Superman better. You're a Superman man.
I think I do like Superman better, but the reason I would see Superman over Fantastic Four, and I'm going to, like, if I'm really making a choice here, Fantastic Four, we've had several takes on that have been not great. And this
And that's never happened to Superman.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
I'm a little iffy about the cast. I'm not totally sold on the cast here. I think...
That's bad. Don't say
no.
Why?
Off of the trailers, like, they don't feel like Reed, Sue, and Johnny specifically to me.
The trailers are being purposefully coy for Fantastic Four, and Superman is giving away the boat.
I think the other thing, to be frank, is like, we were just talking about this with Ironheart, the shine is off the MCU. So it's the sort of thing that, like, of course I'm going to see all of these, and I'm going to continue to see all of these over the course of the rest of my life. But if I'm forced to make a choice, I'm going to choose what could be an intriguing new cinematic universe starting with Superman versus Fantastic Four, which might be the last dying gasp of a cinematic universe.
Ooh, ouch, bro. That's harsh.
That's really funny that you think of it that way, because I think you could say the James Gunn has taken over and this is a first thing, but both of these are equally desperate for a win right now. Both of these universes have died and come back in these movies specifically. So, like, yep. I think they're in the same place. It's less like one person running the ship for Fantastic Four, mm-hmm. but like both these movies need the exact same thing. And honestly, I'm about 50-50. I know the easy money's on Superman because it does feel a little bit more important or iconic, but I think this Fantastic Four movie has the same potential. And, you know, I would spin the die. I would flip the coin 50-50 on both of these.
But you got to choose. You choose one right now.
Oh, man. I really want to choose Fantastic Four to be contrarian.
Well, then do it.
But if I had to walk into one of these theaters right now, it'll also be Superman. It's sad to say. And Pete, what's your answer?
Either way, you'd be a nightmare because you'd be on your phone the whole fucking time.
Yeah, I'm going to be watching. Here's the real answer. I'm going to watch Fantastic Four on my phone while I'm in Superman.
There you go.
Are you choosing? Choose one.
I guess Superman. I don't know.
Wow! Rare triple Superman. There we go. Superman movie of the summer. We're going to see both of them. Justin Atsuka says, think there's any chance we'll see the DC Marvel crossover issues on the apps and or in timely printed trades? Too much licensing BS? I don't know. That's an interesting question because... this is an interesting question for a number of reasons.
Wait, before you do that, Justin, great pick. You know what I mean? Like, way to be out there.
What?
Go ahead.
Justin's
pick. Yeah, not you. Picture. You're JT Sizzle. I'm talking about Justin
Tsuka's picture. Putting.
Yeah. Oh, his pick. Nice photo. Oh, that was not confusing at all.
Yeah.
The reason they are doing these DC Marvel crossovers is because DC, working with Marvel, put out omnibuses of the DC Marvel crossovers from yesteryear, and they sold like gangbusters. Like, people picked up these. They were $125 or $150, I don't remember, but like huge omnibuses, spent a ton of money on them. And they were like, oh, people are interested in this. We can make money off this. Let's do it. Let's go. I'm sure there were a lot of other hurdles there, but that was the main impetus for getting them over the hump into doing this for the first time in 22 years. So I bring this up to say, like, there's got to be a trade collection plan going on in there. They're not just aiming at comic book shops, they're aiming at bookstores. But I don't know if we're going to get Deadpool, Batman, and Batman Deadpool bundled together, or if they're going to wait for whatever they're doing next year and bundle it all together in another big trade or all of that. Like, my guess would be we're going to get, yeah, both. Exactly. There was, they did this for Uncle Scrooge and the Infinity Dime, the thing that Jason Aaron did. They released it in comic book stores, and then they released like a prestige edition with in hardcover in bookstores. And I bet that's what we're going to get.
Yeah, I think they're going to, this was a money move from the jump, and I think they're going to make the money move on every chunk of this they can.
Absolutely. Nat Towson says, inspired by PKJ, what are some of your favorites comics back matter, maps, glossaries, etc.?
Great question. I have to shout out everything that Greg Rucka does in the Lazarus books. I know that's a little bit of recency bias because Lazarus Rising number one came out this past week, but man, does he go full on with the philosophy of the book and putting it out in his own words and adding a ton of interesting news-related things that speak to why he's writing it. So that's really great. Got to take it back to Starman. That was one of the first mainstream comics that I think really built a community in the letters page in the back matter. And there was people talking about things they collected and traded. That it was also where the Shades Journal took off as a separate text page, something that now every comic does. So just reinforcing how important that book was and why the fans of that book are the best. We're not the icons of Pete LePage, we out here.
I love the talk to the Handroid, you know what I mean? I'm a sucker for maps.
You like you like the name Talk to the Handroid.
Yeah, I do.
It's just a letters page, I believe.
Yes, but it's a little bit more than just, you know, there's some heart.
What happens in it? There's
some, I love the Energon Universe letters pages because they're always, I always read the first two paragraphs because every time the editor is like, holy shit, can you believe a Transformer showed up in this issue?
Yes.
It's crazy.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Ooh, it's all Yosemite Sam's editing.
Yeah. I don't know how you can tell this in the text, but he's taken off his cowboy hat. He's throwing it at the ground.
I love extra art that they put in there. I love maps. It's just anytime you're getting extra stuff in the back matter, I'm a happy person.
This is not back matter, but I will say I constantly think about the Fantastic Four Baxter Building cross section that I think was in John Byrne's run.
Yeah, that is, you're talking 90s, isn't that?
I know,
90s,
but I love that. Like, I remember that was just like sitting and being like, studying those rooms way too long.
I'm trying to think what an issue number could have been. Like, it was like Fantastic Four, what, 300, 400? What issue
maybe
would that have been?
Something
400?
Like that.
Really? I remember that very well.
Yes. Michael Tillman says, following up on Seeking Superman's question, if you were perhaps nominated for this year's podcast awards, where would I go to vote for you? Oh, great question, Michael.
Thanks, Michael Tillman.
You could go to podcastawards.com. Sign up there. They will not use your email for anything else. They're not going to sell it to a list or anything like that. And you can do the following. You can nominate Comic Book Club News in the arts category, Comic Book Club, this podcast you're watching or listening to right now, in the comedy category, and your choice in the People's Choice Award, either Comic Book Club or Comic Book Club News. Wow. And voting is open now as of today, July 1st. We are up for nomination in all of those categories. And I believe it closes sometime next month. So get
it.
Get it.
And, thank you.
Thank you in advance. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Michael Tillman says, so Pete wants to see Jurassic Park.
Yeah, that's maybe a better thing to see. You know
no, it's,
I mean?
Not. It's not.
No, get out of here.
Have you seen it already?
I have seen it. Yeah, we talked about it last week. Oh, I went to see it at the $5.
At ScarJo's house?
I saw it at ScarJo's house. I went over thinking we were watching Ghost World, and she was like, surprise, it's the new Jurassic World. And I was like, I'd rather watch Ghost World.
You were like, oh, cool.
Cool.
Let's put this on.
Yeah, she's bad at that movie.
Oh no! Slam. She's wanted to do that movie like her whole life.
I know. That's what weirded me out.
That's
it's crazy.
That's so upsetting.
She's like, so phoning it in. It's
what?
And also every interview is like, she really helped craft this character, and I was like, do what?
Yeah,
crafted how?
Oh man,
it's like she the same way she crafted, like she went to a pottery class and she's like, I made an ashtray.
What?
Anyway, I don't know what I'm talking about. I guess. I guess that's it for your audience questions.
I guess
it is now time to move on to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online, because if you had $25, you'd probably want to go to a comic book shop, get you some comics.
Get them.
Oh, yeah. So all we need is a first hand up, a volunteer, a pick me. And then you'll win
$25. That's it.
That's how easy it is.
Yeah, maybe Schreikler wants to do it. Make some of that money back.
Yeah.
No. Somebody nominating somebody else.
That's good.
Yep.
There's someone on Kick earlier spamming us. Kick.
I don't think that was a real person, I got to be honest.
No, Alex.
Curtis is in.
You. Curtis Archangel says me. There you go.
All right, Curtis. Fresh face. All right.
Curtis, thank you so much. Today's trivia is about the anthology Hyde Street and a small nod to the legend Peter Kwan. R.I.P. Rain from Big Trouble in Little China. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. What kind of anthology is Hyde Street? Is it A, horror? B, what's the T stand for? Truth be told, I wish I was related to Douglas. Or C, Matthew T. Adams.
Wow, Pete. The lore. Talk about, we need a map to your trivia questions.
Curtis is stuck, but Easy Reader is helping him out. I appreciate that.
A is correct.
Curtis panicking after the first question. Yeah, I will say, it's dense. The questions are dense.
They're hard. Congratulations, Curtis. That's the first question. Let's get that second question.
Well, yeah, let's do that. Which is a character on Hyde Street? Is it A, Pranky? B, have you even met a rave chick? C, Joshua Rave Chick.
So in this scenario, Joshua Rave Chick changed his last name because he met a rave chick?
Yeah.
Pete, what is it like going out to the rave in the, Baltimore, Pennsylvania area that you've established as a place where you live?
A lot of barns. A lot of barn raves.
A barn rave?
Yeah. A
is correct.
Wow. That question mark doing a lot of work.
A lot of work on that. Here we go. Last one. Who puts out this comic under the Ghost Machine Creator Own label? Is it A, Image? B, We Get It? In F. Mary Kill, you would see F. William Parker.
Wow. That's... You're becoming the Shakespeare of this format, Pete. You're doing pivots, turns of phrases that I can't track, and I'm a student of the work.
A?
A is correct.
Wow. Congratulations, Curtis. You are going to get a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. Shoot us an email at comicbookclublive.com and we'll get that out to you. comicbookclublive@gmail.com, excuse me. Pete, what is the secret movie that you were...
Of course we are talking about the 1989 classic Gleaming the Cube.
Wow, man. Pete.
I remember the posters deep for that. Cut.
Oh, yes. Yeah, man.
I don't think I ever saw the movie, though.
That was a bit of vernacular that never caught on, Gleaming the Cube.
Yeah, I think they advertise it in comics a lot, and that's why I knew it.
I think so, but also that is a movie that is held up as like Gleaming the Cube. You referenced. Know,
You know what that means.
Come on, man.
But no one ever said that outside of that movie, I believe.
Well, comics.
Seeking Superman, saw that in theater. Flex. Yes,
comics are Gleaming the Cube every Wednesday in comic book stores. What are you looking forward to, Gleam?
Which cubes are you gleaming, boys?
Oh, man. Absolute Green Lantern, which I was surprised about. Batgirl number 9.
You were surprised it was coming out?
No, I was surprised that I liked it so much. I'm not usually a Green Lantern guy. But
it's coming out tomorrow.
That's right. Yeah. You don't like the greenest of the lanterns.
Yeah. Batgirl number 9 and Birds of Prey number 23.
Great. Justin, what about you?
Lots of stuff to look forward to tomorrow. The X-Men Hellfire Vigil number one coming out.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like we've talked about sort of, we had a podcast about the State of X. I feel like this is that in comic book form, giving us a flag jammed into what's come before and what's coming next. That's really exciting for the X-Men universe. And I'll shout out Ultimate Wolverine number 7. Really liked, this book has sort of slow played the story a bit. It's a hugely popular book. Badass Wolverine, and I feel like we just sort of got Logan back in the at the end of the last issue, and I feel like we're pivoting to some real badassery going forward. So shouts to that. I like a badass Wolverine, unlike my other two co-hosts.
Yeah, yes. You're the only one.
Very curious to check out Captain America number 1. Want to see what Chip Zdarsky is going to do on that. Indeed, also, we've got the death of the Immortal Thor at Immortal Thor 25. Oh, that should be interesting. I'm trying to shout out something that is not from Marvel. How about, I'll say Sisterhood, a Hyde Street story.
Ooh, there you go.
I've been very interested in what Ghost Machine has been doing. I was a little iffy the first time they released a one-shot, but it was really good. So curious to see what this team does the next time out. And all of those titles and many more are going to be in our Stack podcast that debuts Wednesday at 9 a.m., both the Stack feed and the Comic Book Club feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show.
Yeah.
A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Jermaine McLaughlin for coming on to talk about DC Superman, the official cookbook, which is in stores now. Also, Philip Kennedy Johnson for talking about Batman and Robin, The Incredible Hulk,
Great
Adventures
stuff.
Of Superman, The Book of El, and so much more. Check out all of that. Next week on the show, Heather Antos is going to be here. She's the editor for IDW Star Trek line, so we're going to get in and talk about that.
Dude, you're going to lose it.
I really like the lore war.
Comic Book Club News, our daily news podcast Monday through Friday. Also, Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. As mentioned, we recapped first three episodes of Ironheart. We're going to do the next three episodes of Ironheart as well. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Keep your microwaves off, folks. It's damaging to Wi-Fi. Google it, please.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.